Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and it's time for another edition of Star Wars Rank. Me and a guest ranking things in Star Wars. It's just like you're on the playground in the 80s, 90s, the aughts, and probably once we can get back to schoolyards soon here. I'm Ken Napsok, joined by Joseph Scrimshaw. Joseph, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I am in my own little playground, my apartment playground.
It all comes back to that. That's where the love of Star Wars grows and the discussions that we used to have. I distinctly remember, I got an old friend of mine named Gavin. We've been friends since second grade. And we would sit out in the middle of a soccer field. And we'd be like, well, I like the G.I. Joe Sky Striker. I like the Cobra Rattler. I like the X-Wing. I like the B-Wing. And those are the conversations we had. And it's nice to know that we can do that all through our lives now with microphones. Did you have that experience as well?
Oh, yeah. I did lots of different kind of playing. I remember that there was a specific challenge to be brave enough to hang upside down on some monkey bars so you could pretend to be Luke trapped by the Wampa on Hoth.
How far did you get? Did you win it? How'd you do?
Yeah, you know, it took me a while to build up the courage, but it was really the motivation of like, no, I need to feel that.
That's awesome. That is awesome indeed. Today we're going to be ranking something pretty simple and direct, which I love to do. We are going to be ranking, per Joseph's suggestion, the best Imperial vehicles. So before I ask Joseph why his heart went to that direction today, because it's a great topic. I love getting simple. We love sometimes getting deep, with deep themes, big scenes, fun things, silly things. But this is one of those just basic ones, those basic conversations that, quite frankly, sometimes I'm surprised we didn't already do episodes like this. But it's the bare bones, the building blocks of our Star Wars fandom are these kind of ranks, these kind of rankings about vehicles and ships and all those kind of things. So, Joseph, why did your heart lead you to the dark side of vehicles today?
Two things. Exactly what you were saying is I love doing all the deep dives and talking about like theme and meaning and all those things in Star Wars. And sometimes I feel like maybe we should balance that even more. And I like that you do on rank that you do some of these more straightforward. What is awesome? What looks cool? What, you know, makes you want to go on the playground and pretend you're one of these ships flying through space? So it was definitely that. You know, some just like, hey, let's balance the deep dives with just the sort of aesthetic joy of Star Wars, which can absolutely have its own depth. And then the reason I specifically said Imperial ships is there is one that I realized my mind has just been floating to, and I've just been nerding out in my soul. There's one of the ships on this list that is the reason I wanted to talk about Imperial ships.
Ooh, I love that. I love when we have those little, like, I got to get to this somehow, some way on Force Center, whether, again, the big themes, big moments, or these little things that we have in our hearts here. So this is why we're ranking the best Imperial vehicles. Now, before we get into the list, Joseph, let's discuss. So, you know, a lot of times we do Hall of Fame, and there were some potential Hall of Fame vehicles here that we just figured are too big to be in the conversation. Then in discussing it, we kind of changed our mind. We're not putting anything into the Hall of Fame. However, we will address the Death Star. Technically, you could call it a vehicle, but Joseph, you felt, and I agree, that's not necessarily the spirit of this conversation, right?
Yeah, I mean, I love the Death Star, and I think technically, it moves around in space. It could be considered a vehicle, but it seems so much more like, I don't know, a home. It's the Dianoga's house. That's what the Death Star is.
That's right. If we're ranking houses in Star Wars, mobile homes, so to speak.
The Death Star is a giant, violent mobile home. Technically could be considered a vehicle, but we're going to leave it off the list.
Yeah, it just seems fair. Like I said, not entirely in the spirit of what we're talking about here today. And in fact, even if you look at those visual dictionaries, it's sometimes listed as a location. It's definitely probably a location on the call sheet for any production. So that's it. But then again, so would a Star Destroyer. Please don't at me. We are going to begin. Without further ado, we're diving on into our list of the best Imperial vehicles, which means, Joseph, we're going to begin with your number five.
My number five is the Lambda-class Imperial Shuttle. This is, of course, an absolute classic. It has got the very cool design. I think it fits in with everything that had come before in real-world linear time of A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi. But it's also kind of different looking. It's so angular in those wings that you can flip up and down. It's very assertive and well, looking very, very functional, still fitting in with the Empire by looking kind of angular and evil. It looks like a grumpy spaceship. And a part of my love for it comes from being of the age that by the time Return of the Jedi came out, I had had a lot of time to absorb everything that had been. So it felt so new and different. And then over the years, I think I've come to really appreciate it for the fact that it is designed to look cool as a ship, but also it is designed for dramatic entrances, right? That's kind of what it's about, that, you know, landing ramp comes down, that boarding ramp, and you get to see the emergence of Vader, you get to see Emperor. It is like the evil runway of Return of the Jedi that is really presenting us with these villains. And it's going to come up a couple times on here. One of the other reasons that it's close to my heart is this is one of the biggest vehicles that I got to have back in the day. I got this for Christmas when I lived in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota at the time. Brooklyn Center, Minnesota at the time. And it was a absolute prized possession. I still have it. I still have the box. But at one time when we moved, my brother was concerned that the movers would be too rough with our Star Wars toys, so he wrote all over the boxes. So my Imperial Shuttle box has a handwritten message that says, "Handle with care, chumps."
Always good to inspire care.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think my brother was trying to pick up just kind of the lingo and vernacular of Wolverine, who we both really liked at the time, still do, but instead just insulted people who are, you know, working for a living.
We're the working man, just like a good shuttle driver. And
exactly.
I love this choice, man. I think it's a great way to lead off. It was something that probably would have made my list as well. If I knew that you didn't love it as much as I do, because the design, the beauty of it, the elegance, the sleekness, all those things kind of jump off the screen and fascinate you as a young kid. I just remember seeing a lot of those behind the scenes magazines, some of the thoughts going into from the creators of you know, the designers of Return of the Jedi, just what went into it. You know, I was just fascinated by how it looked, how it felt. And I think, yeah, because of our connection to toys, whether it be Lego sets or Star Wars, the Kenner stuff, just the wings moving up just was, it pulled me in. It enraptured me. I was just, I love this, the design, like I said, the elegance of it there. And did you spend a lot of time as a kid in Return of the Jedi wondering where these were, not in the other movies, but not like a, where were they, but just like, ooh, were they just like behind the Death Star waiting in New Hope? Where were these beautiful things?
I think if I thought about it at all, which I don't clearly remember, I think I would have just assumed that they're new, that the Empire made them new, that, you know, they had some free time on their hands in between Empire and Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
And if they built a whole new Death Star, they could have built some shuttles too.
Yeah. Yeah, and I love, you know, special editions. I do like, you know, taking some of the unused footage or whatever and just kind of throwing it in there with Vader. I actually really like that. You know, this is 90s. This is well before the modern era where we start seeing these shuttles pop up in other places. But I did appreciate the kid in me appreciated that connection in the special edition of, oh, yep, okay, it was there.
Oh, yeah. In the delivery on that Empire line, you know, but prepare my shuttle for my arrival. It's like, it's pretty intense for just kind of basic administration of day to day tasks.
Have you thought to it? This is why I love this vehicle. It inspired. These are real thoughts I had on the playground. You're traveling along. We now know, thanks to these, you know, cross section books and even some scenes here with the Delta class shuttle with Krennic, you know. Not necessarily roomy on the inside. Have you just ever thought of just how uncomfortable that conversation might have been while you're shuttling around the galaxy with Palpatine just sitting there and some dignitaries? You know, it's close quarters. Like, what are they talking about while they're in there? These are the things I used to think about.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. And for my imagination, the Emperor and the dignitaries have a natural stench of evil, but because they're very wealthy, they cover it with perfume. So I think that they have that specific stench of something sickly sweet on top, covering something foul underneath.
just there's one poor, like, Imperial officer who doesn't have a stormtrooper mask on. He's just sitting in there like, God, bless it. I can't. It's so bad in here. It's so bad in here.
I can't let it show. Can't let it show. Yeah. The last thing I'd shout out is this is one of those vehicles that becomes really important to the narrative too. Of we get a little bit of that mood that you're talking about with Han saying, you know, I don't think the Empire had him in mind, had Wookiees in mind when they designed it, you know? So it is important narratively too.
Yeah. And the final one for me, the shuttle Tidarium, as you mentioned, the one they have, for a spell growing up, again, kids, before Wikipedia, before encyclopedias, you had to wait for the card sets, maybe. I thought that they were just Tidarium shuttles. That's what they were. Then Lambda class came later on in my life.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense.
Yeah. So little know-it-all Kenny on the playground was like, no, they're Tidarium shuttles. I'm sorry, everybody. That's
already a trivia champ.
Yeah, great. Yeah, already. Great start to our list there. Looking at the best Imperial vehicles, one of the more beautiful vehicles, if we can describe the oppressive wings of the Empire, is beautiful. Number five for me, starting my list, we're going with something a little new. I'm sneaking in something new, but I thought about it and I just They grabbed me when I first saw them on screen. You don't see them necessarily in a ton of action, but I just like the look. I like the class of stormtroopers that kind of come with this vehicle. And we are going to Rogue One and the combat assault tank, the TX-225 Occupier. Because why not just say it in the title of the vehicle?
That's great.
So this one, I don't know. I just, maybe it goes back to the Phantom Menace, where I do enjoy the idea of those tanks. I think those vehicles, the tanks from Phantom Menace, Clone War era stuff, the Separatist tanks, beautiful. I have beautiful design. And so I know, I just, the Empire, it would make sense to me that they would have a tank. And I love the tank driver. I love the tank pilot. I love that scene, the guerrilla warfare in the street. It's just, I hate that term gritty. It's overused, but that was just like this, wow, a gritty guerrilla war battle in Star Wars and this tank. And not that I have sympathy for the tank drivers, but just like, they're just doing their job, right? Oh God. So anyways, it just inspired a lot of thoughts about that scene, taking back into that playground conversation of just taking your figures and having a fight in the street. And I liked it. It's a ground assault vehicle, where you're so used to things floating and flying and zipping along in Star Wars. And I think that's why I do like just the slow, methodical TX-225 Occupier from the Rothana Heavy Engineering. And yes, I'm reading that. I would not get that in a trivia contest or on the playground. So, Joseph, that's my number five. What do you think about the tank?
Oh, that is great. There's so many great things about it. Yeah, I think a part of, what we're searching for when we say gritty with Rogue One and with this tank is a lot of stuff in Star Wars looks cool, but is clearly not maybe the most practical in the world. And this tank is totally practical, right? If you actually did want to hold a smaller urban environment, this tank is, relatively well designed for it. I'm not a military expert, but it's not as crazy as some of the other things that we've seen in Star Wars. Love that it's called Occupier, because when we're introduced to Imperial naming protocols by things like Death Star and Star Destroyer, there's some honesty in the way that they name things.
I want our branding to state our mission.
Could have a tank that says, "We'll kill you. We don't care." Yeah. I mean,
this is the TX-230 killer tank.
This is the boot on your neck. That's the name of this new tank. Yeah. I love that. Love that. And then this fun detail, because when I saw it on your list, I was like, is that what I think it is? I realized that reading it on Wikipedia that I have been led astray by toys. It was originally designed to be a hover tank thing, and some of the toys described it that way, and some of the toys described the driver as a hover tank driver. But it does not hover at all. It occupies. It occupies the ground.
Yeah, it is on the ground. That is a tank and boots on the ground situation, and might be some of the reasons I love it, because it's a little bit different. So with the occupier occupying space behind us, see what I did there? We are going to move to your number four.
My number four is another vehicle that occupies the ground and our future, and it is the Imperial Troop Transport. Now, this one... this one is just the circle of Star Wars life in vehicle form. This was the first toy that was produced back in the day that was not based on something from the movies. If you're not familiar with it, it is kind of just this flat little slug of a ship with a kind of little rounded face that the pilots sit in. It's got a blaster on top, and then it's got these little kind of swinging doors that stormtroopers can just stand in or pile out of. So the toy, it's a pretty straightforward thing. Came with lots of little bits and pieces. It had a little weird prisoner hat that you could put on somebody, but you could just slot the stormtroopers into these little doors. So it's this kind of weird transport where it looked like the stormtroopers are riding on the outside, but it looked cool. And then it appeared in various Legends stuff. It appeared in Rebels, but its big recent comeback was that it physically appeared in Mandalorian. And the what used to just be the kind of the stormtroopers sit there and ride on the outside did totally become doors that a bunch of stormtroopers piled out of. And now they're making a vintage line version of the Imperial troop transport from the Mandalorian. So it is the entire circle of Star Wars life, from toy to screen to toy again.
Such a great choice, because I was watching those last two episodes this weekend, 7 and 8 of Mandalorian. And when that pops up, you know, it's like, I can't help but get excited. And again, we saw it in Rebels, and I loved it in Rebels. I just was like, oh God, that's so fun, because this was one of those shared punchlines, those shared inside jokes with Star Wars fans who grew up in that era. It was just, you remember that crappy Imperial transport thing? But then sometimes things are so simple. You called it a slug. It's so simple. It's so part of just, like I said, these inside jokes, they just become loved and deserve the love. And I love that Filoni, it makes sense, he would be the guy that'd be like, you know what we got to do? We got to base a lot of action around that toy. And then, like you said, it shows up Mandalorian, and it works. And that kind of tweak to the design of it, just, it's like a clown car now, and all these troopers are popping out of it. I just love it. I do love it. So a great choice.
Yeah. Yeah. And unlike the Occupier tank, this one is that great Star Wars, like, this doesn't quite make sense, but let's try.
Yeah. There's no science in Star Wars. Let's just go. Hey, man, we saw in Rebels, these things cook. You can get to where you need to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you can fit all sorts. I love your clown car, the clown troop transport.
I wonder if the Rebels call them that. Oh, look, dude, you got some bucket heads here in a clown car. Clown car full of bucket heads. And it worked. It live action version of it, it really worked. And I'm sure there was a big smile on Dave Filoni's cowboy hat wearing face when they pulled that off.
Yeah, it's just insanely beautiful. It's never a toy that I had, but it is one that I saw in the stores and coveted. So it's great to see it in reality. And maybe I'll pony up for that vintage one.
That sounds right. Sounds like you might need to there. Great choice for the number 4 on your list. And this, of course, really came back big in Rebels. And I'm going that down that route for my number 4. It is the Quasar Fire class cruiser carrier. All right. Are you ready for one of those weird Ken stories of real life and Star Wars and how he ends up liking things?
Yeah,
this pops up in Are you ready? This pops up in Rebels. Now, first kind of mentioned. I was doing a little research on this. There, first time was kind of mentioned and originated from the book that ended essentially my Star Wars Legends fandom back in the day, and it's the Truce at Bakura. This is the first time it kind of popped up, and I did read that book, and then I finished that book and went, I don't know if these Star Wars books are for me. But that's another time, another conversation. But these come back full force in Rebels. And I love when they do that in modern Star Wars. Go into Legends, find something, pull out the pieces we love and make something out of it and repurpose a lot of things. And I enjoy it. And the Quasar Fire, there's the Quasar Fire and the Quasar Fire, the 1 class and the 2 class. These are the ships, in case you're not familiar with them, flat up top like a Star Destroyer, like a classic wedge shape. But down below, it's got 4... looks like USB ports. Looks like you can plug some oppression into your ship. And in there, they have approximately about 48 TIE fighters ready to go. And they're seen a lot in Rebels, of course. The Rebels actually get a hold of one and kind of becomes part of their ragtag fleet. And the reason I love that, my dad and his brother, my late uncle Nick, were in the Navy. And I did not join the Navy. I did not go into the military. But I always thought if I was, I'd probably carry on their legacy and go into the Navy. So my dad had a lot of Navy books around the house. Just those books. You got a lot of these books in the 80s where it was like, do you like big rigs? Well, here's a book of big rig photos. And so my dad had like Navy ships. And I would just, as a kid, around this time when I'm watching Star Wars and getting all into that world, I just thumb through almost every day these Navy ships. And I was fascinated by an aircraft carrier. And I got to go on the USS Enterprise one time, the big one, the big aircraft carrier. Yeah, I've seen that. And I think I saw I'm going to mess it up. Someone's going to like the New Jersey, the battleship. We'd go down and do tours. You can do tours. And so I was fascinated with the aircraft carriers, and I was fascinated with the battleships, but also the destroyers. And my dad was on like a sub tender, and my uncle was on a different ship. So I used to study it. And so I just love that the Imperial Navy is no different. And so when these popped up in Rebels, it just got my mind thinking, going back to the childhood, the youth, the playgrounds of our minds. And I was like, I don't know, you know, Star Destroyer is great. If I had to be, in the Imperial Navy and I was stationed somewhere. Okay, that Superstar Sorrel, Death Star. But I don't know. There's something I liked about this. This would feed my little daydream imagination of what does a destroyer do in battle against a battleship? Like, how can they, how, you know, what purpose do they serve in the Navy? So I have that here. And I just became fascinated with the Quasar Fire class cruiser carriers from Rebels. And that's why I like them. I don't know if there's any toys that exist of them. I'd love to get a hold of one if they do. I just became quickly fascinated with this new piece to Star Wars and old piece to Star Wars vehicle lore.
Oh, wow. That is great and totally makes sense of why you would like it from so many different perspectives. I really love the design of it, that it is one of the things from Imperial design that is a little bit more simple and straightforward, right? That it does. It's just kind of this flat, brutal triangle with the four death-dealing USB ports, as you put it. And this is great. I'm so glad we're doing this episode because as soon as I saw the ship, I was like, oh, yeah, that one. But scrolling through Wikipedia, it's a canon detail that has escaped me because there's so many to enjoy all of the different connections I remembered it from Rebels, but having only watched Rebels once at this point, I didn't quite track the significance of all of the events that happen with it. I didn't pick up that it is appears to be mentioned in Alphabet Squadron, which we both really enjoyed. And yeah, it's really, really cool.
Yeah, and Han Solo, during his time in the academy, was assigned to this for a training run for this type of ship. So, yeah, it's got a lot of history in this new modern era, but also again tied to legends, which a lot of the vehicles, you know, the TIE Defender, and I don't want to step on anything on your list, Joseph, but like, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, hey, remember that cool weird concept of a ship back at a novel in 1994? Let's try to see what we can do with that. And that, as much as I sometimes say, hey, I don't really dig the legends as much as others, I love when that happens, and this is a great example of it.
Yeah.
I'd be a chef, a short order cook on one of these ships. I don't know. That is my number four, which means we are up to your number three.
My number three is not an obscure ship from Legends that made its way into modern canon. It is pretty loud and proud and very, very big. It is the Super Star Destroyer or Executor Class Star Dreadnought. But I wanted to go a little bit deeper, so I'm going to say specifically the Executor, or some other people call it the Executor. I remember being yelled at, I believe, by my brother that it should be pronounced Executor. So I have stuck with that throughout my life, unless he, in fear of him calling me a chump like he did to the moving people. But I love the general design of the Super Star Destroyer. And remember in my youth, kind of as I started to get a little bit older and pour through books and trading cards and realizing, oh, the Star Destroyer is small. And then the Super Star Destroyer is so big. And I think because I had lived both in smaller towns, in larger urban areas, there was something about it that really struck me, that like the exterior of it, the sort of flat part, was more like, you know, plains and fields and farmland. And then all that stuff bunched up in the middle was like the city. And it was like, how can a ship be both like urban and rural at the same time? And I think it just kind of fascinated me visually because of that.
Yeah.
But then the Executor, when I started to think about so much in Empire Strikes Back that is important and resonant happens specifically on the Executor. You know, you have the shot of Vader in his meditation chamber. You have the transmission to the Emperor where they discuss the son of Skywalker. You have the bounty hunter meeting. You really get into the data pits. It's the Star Destroyer or Super Star Destroyer where kind of big important scenes to Star Wars happen.
So, I mean, God, and the introduction of it in Empire with the introduction of the Imperial March is iconic for a reason. The sound, the Imperial March is the sounds of the Empire taking over the galaxy. And I love the way they played with it. You know, like, hey, you remember those big ships from the first movie? Hell, this one's going to fly over all of those. And the shadow of the Empire will creep out with the ship. I think that's a great choice, Joseph. And you're right. It is true. Talking about locations, Death Star being located, this is a classic location.
Yeah, yeah, it is absolutely central to Star Wars. And yeah, I love that you pointed out that the Imperial March comes with it, because it goes along with the, like, yeah, they lost the Death Star, but they have all this machinery and all this size and might, and the Empire is too big to fail kind of vibe.
Yeah. It is an Adam McKay movie, right? In the Imperial ranks. And as far as how to say that specific one, the executor versus executor, I, like you, grew up saying executor, and I think it's not quite the AT-AT fight. It's not that. And there's probably, you know, an answer somewhere. But I remember, like, when I was doing the audio read of my book, and it came to this, me and the engineer had a debate, and he ended up winning. They made me say both ways, and they put the I believe they put the executor in the book because he was about 10, 15 years younger than me. Mm. And not to put it on a generational divide, but you, me, my friend Adam Witt from the Movie Guys, he's about our age, a couple years older, and we had a conversation about it. He's like, no, the executor is how I always said it. Even though executor makes, I guess, more sense with Darth Vader.
I'm
going to execute you.
Yeah, not execute you. Yeah. It made hearing about various legal and financial terms a lot more exciting for me growing up.
It's just in business meetings, just drifting off. Dum, bum,
ba-da, yeah. Dum, ba-da. This is the executor of the will. Like, whoa, wow. Yeah. So yeah. Cool. Yeah. So something I'm sure people listening, we have so many knowledgeable fans. I'm sure somebody knows this off the top of their head. I bet there's something that happened generationally, either something it was mentioned on a behind the scenes or maybe in one of the radio dramas that were out back in the day. I bet there's some reason that it got in all of our heads that I'll find out after I Google this.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, I don't care how you say it. I know what you mean, and I love this. I love that you said the city, the thinking about the city and rural and urban. It is like a floating Manhattan. It is. You got Central Park. You got this. You got the downtown. Yeah, totally is.
Yeah.
I think people would be mad if we didn't include that, so. I'm glad it's there, which means we are on to my number three. And my number three, we're now getting to some classics. And not that I was trying to be too cute. I was going with my heart on my fourth and fifth spots, but it's time for some classics. And I am going to the all-terrain scout transport, the ATSD, the Chicken Walker. And I almost didn't include this on the list, Joseph.
What?
And that's one of the things I kind of thought about it. I thought about things I own. Lego sets, figures or any, you know, little toys or anything like that. And also, again, going back to the playgrounds of my youth. And yeah, I can't separate just my little giddy joy for a 7-year-old Kenny seeing this Star Wars thing called Return of the Jedi and seeing this walker being scared, intimidated, so happy when Chewie and the Ewoks go, kill, the director and producer of the movie, and all those things. And I grew up calling it ATSD or Chicken Walker, which was really referred to a lot of the times like that. I've talked about my little fascination that there's one on Hoth, that you just get that little shot of one on Hoth. I love, jokes aside, I know, famous YouTube channels love using this as a joke, but I love when it shows up in Rogue One, cause it should be there. That's what it would be used for. As the Empire tries to control and maintain control of the galaxy city by city. So, I really do love it. Even though other than Rogue One, we don't see it succeed often. It doesn't seem, and I'll tell you what, I have a Black Series one that's to sort of scale to the 3¾ line. And that would be, and used to, I think you see it in my old apartment, Joseph, it would always fall over.
Oh yeah.
I have the Lego one. I just got that out of storage again. It would always fall over. So that keeps in line. That's on brand. And final note for me on this, when it shows up in the fourth episode of The Mandalorian, I thought Bryce Dallas Howard's decision to turn this into a dinosaur, so to speak, and just have a great I just rewatched it this past week. I've been doing my Mandalorian rewatch, and I'm like, yep, you know what? She nailed it. And for something that has been tripped by Ewoks and doesn't, you know, doesn't seem to be that sturdy once you actually kind of put it out there. And again, it does, poor Nanta, rest in peace. Nanta fell at the foot of one of these. But to see it in Mandalorian used in this wonderful, creative, artistic way just kind of brought it home for me. Yeah, I do love the AT-SD.
That is great. I'm so glad you included this one. The AT-SD is almost, it's so, of course, it's almost like if somebody asked me what are my favorite things in life, I would never think to list oxygen because it's just there and it's essential. It is. AT-SD is so great. I agree with you about Bryce Dallas Howard kind of giving justice to the AT-SD of making it scary and building up, like it is really terrifying and it can take out a lot of people. And there's a reason that, you know, these pirates can, you know, have a lot of power with it. All sorts of great stuff there. And then, I go to Return of the Jedi and you get to see so many cool shots with the AT-SD in terms of vehicles having just a ton of variety. I mean, the wobble of the legs when the one gets the steps on the logs. Yeah. It's one of the best pratfalls in cinema. Sorry, Charlie Chaplin. That AT-SD falling over, one of the best pratfalls. It's just so great. And the way they turn their heads and the sound of their blasts and everything about it is just so great.
I mean, come on. That's a classic. That's a classic. When you grow up with that, when you see, that's your first kind of real exposure to Star Wars is that sound and just the thing. And again, the behind the scenes stuff of going to some of those early docs and those early magazines, just to see the scale model of it and to learn as say like an 8 or 9 year old, that thing I saw when I was 7 or 8 was a model, and it was, and there was some dude in with no shirt and jeans on. I remember the shot of him kind of fixing the model, just kind of, it helps kind of build the lore of these vehicles in your mind. So the AT-SD, the Chicken Walker, number 3 on my list, which means we're up to your number 2.
My number 2 is the reason that I wanted to talk about Imperial vehicles. We finally got to it. Now, it is of a specific, it is one of a kind of that there are many of, which is another super important ship in Star Wars, which is, it's a TIE fighter variant. The TIE fighter itself is, of course, amazing and classic and like oxygen. But this is one of the newer designs that I absolutely love, and it is the TIE Striker. It is from Rogue One. It is the one that has the sort of bigger, longer pod, but then the cool angular bat-like dagger wings that sit on top of it. And then it's got this cool history built into it that it is designed mainly for atmosphere. It can go into space, but is mainly for atmosphere. So the wings are on top to collect the sunlight, solar panels. And then the idea is also that it was primarily produced and used on Scarif. So there are only a few left after the events of Rogue One. And this is one for me that's just, I love it to death aesthetically. I think because it is bat-like, it is after years and years and years of different TIE fighters. Like I was, again, of the right age to realize, oh, there's a TIE fighter and then there's a TIE bomber. So there's going to be a new TIE in Return of the Jedi because there's always new TIEs. It is one of the oldest ships that gets revamped in different ways. Yeah. And my whole list could be TIEs. I love almost all the TIEs. So to be as old as I was when Rogue One came out and to have them reconfigure the basic components of a TIE fighter in yet another totally brand new way that totally surprised me and I absolutely loved, I think made me love it even more of like, wow, you can still make that exciting. And I just absolutely love it.
That's a great point because I know sometimes I see some cynicism wrapped around each time there's a new movie and there's a new design. Not that all the designs are home runs, but the very concept of a new ship that we're familiar with somehow causes some people to roll their eyes. And I don't know, maybe I don't necessarily think it's just generational, but like that's just It's just fun, right? Like, don't you want to have a new Star Wars vehicle to talk about, to collect, to fall in love with? To be, it's like the U-Wing. I love the U-Wing. And where's the U-Wing the rest of the story? I don't know. We'll find out. But I love what I'm seeing right here. And the TIE Striker is in that category for me. It's like a lot of TIE Fighters, wonderfully awkward, but wonderfully designed and makes sense. And I love the atmosphere decision. I love that it's on Scarif. Because who doesn't want to go to Scarif, right? You
yeah, want to get exactly.
That beach duty. Get that beach duty, you fly around in the Striker, just kind of patrolling the beaches. You got shore troopers down below. Where, yeah, Scarif's where you want to end up. You want to retire to go to Scarif as an Imperial officer or stormtrooper or pilot. So I really like your decision. Do they have good toy versions of that out? I don't know that off the top of my head.
Yeah. There's a great TIE Striker that comes with just like a classic Imperial TIE Fighter pilot. And I've got my Amazon tab open. I might break. This one might break me. I really don't have room for vehicles, man, but I need a TIE Striker. I think it's great what you're saying about, different fans are going to have different opinions. And some people think, we're just rewriting the same old songs. And these are all cover band TIE Fighters. Got it. And
sure.
If that's your opinion, totally understandable and respect different opinions. But for me, I think it goes back to, this was a tradition of the original trilogy of, hey, let's have a new, we got a TIE bomber. Now we got a TIE interceptor. And I think it's about the fact that a little bit, there's the reality of in-world of like, well, yeah, of course they would use similar designs or like you said with the AT-ST, just that's the thing they use for that place. But outside of the movie, it goes back to the spirit of all those 70s dudes and their jeans and their wild mustaches kit bashing and the designers going crazy and having fun. The new designs for ships and the variations of old ships, they're the spirit of fun and adventure from the designers to the people actually physically making the models. And it's about that too. It's about that sense of play and discovery. And that means a lot to me. And the fact that the TIE Striker connected with me. And I think part of the reason I really wanted to talk about it was Rogue One for me is just knocks it out of the park design wise. The U-Wing has now become meshed in Star Wars canon, and I think a lot of people's hearts. The Shore Trooper is my favorite variation on Imperial Troopers, but we haven't talked a lot about the TIE Striker, and I honestly don't know if people love it as much as I do, so I wanted to get a big shout out there for the TIE Striker.
Shout out to the TIE Striker. I love it. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, could you imagine if you're a concept artist, a designer, someone even in a creature shop, and you get a job on a new Star Wars film, and they're like, "Oh, but you can't have any new vehicles. You have to use whatever was established in 1977." Can I do a variant on it? No. It's got to be the same. Just not fun. Not fun. It's not part of Star Wars. Because you're right. It is just about those, as much as those weird hippies in Van Nuys designing things for George, as it is anything else.
Exactly.
Great list so far here. We're coming down to the end. We'll take a quick break in a bit, but we're going to get to my number two. And you mentioned it, and it's part of it, and it's part of clearly why I love new designs in each movie. I'm listing number two, the TIE Interceptor. The TIE / IN Interceptor, the Sinar Fleet System's answer to the A-Wing, so to speak here. So, even though I did see New Hope technically first, I was too young to really remember. It was Return of the Jedi that pulled me in. So I grew up not knowing that this was an addition to the movie. This just was, again, a different part of the Imperial Armada. They have different kinds of ships. It just made sense to me. I don't know. Maybe it's because I was also a G.I. Joe fan. And it was like, we have different kind of vehicles in each line. I've grown to love and appreciate the TIE Interceptor more and more. I also love the idea that part of the concept behind it was, hey, man, those TIE fighters that we had in 77 and 80, could you see out the side of them? No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Oh, we probably got to fix that. So, of course, now you get some peripheral vision in your flight here. Little design, and again, it's good. And I've got a Wikipedia tab up here. I can talk to you about some of the finer points of the Tyner Scepter. I'm taking it back to the beginning, man, and on the playground and just discussing this stuff. This was, and there is some canon, you know, information that follows this line of thinking, but this was on the playground. This was the Imperial answer to those fast little A-wings. And I still look, if I'm playing Battlefront 2 and I go do one of the flying levels or something like that, which I don't do as much. I kind of miss that. Maybe I'll give that a go. That's what I see it. Ooh, if I'm going to fly in an A-wing, I'll fly in an entire interceptor on the next round, or I see a bunch of A-wings fly around, I better get in the interceptor. It's just, that's where it lands for me. It is this fast little version of the Imperial, the classic Imperial TIE fighter. I think it's a great design. I have one of the Lego sets still, and I pulled that out recently on a stream, along with my AT-SD Lego set. But beyond that, you know what I had that I didn't have a ton of, and I don't have it anymore, Joseph, but do you ever get just the models, the old like snap or glue models?
No, I never did.
Yeah. See, my dad, going back to my dad in the Navy, my dad loved to build, and my uncle too, loved to build models of Navy ships. So my dad would have, he has an old roll top desk, which he still has. And I have memories of him as a kid just sitting there painstakingly. And he's an engineer. He's really good with his hands. He's a designer, that kind of stuff. He painstakingly putting together, models of Navy ships. So I wanted to do, you know, you want to be like your dad. You're like the child. You want to be like the Mandalorian. So I got a hold of the TIE Interceptor one. Now, it was a snap together one, but I put it together, and like I had that in my room. It was like, my dad's building, the USS New Jersey. I'm building the TIE Interceptor. And so it always will have a big, important place in my Star Wars love and heart.
Oh, man, that's great. That makes so much sense. I love the TIE Interceptor, too. I can't remember when it became a part of my canon knowledge that they were faster, but, you know, you certainly get to experience that playing, you know, all the video games, going back, you know, Rogue Leader and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And still the Battlefront 2, if you want to zip around and feel, you know, if you have a need for speed, you got a TIE Interceptor. But I just remember thinking they looked so cool. They looked, you know, just much more vicious with those darting, pointy little wings. And I think, as I'm remembering, talking about owning the Imperial shuttle, I did have a Kenner TIE Interceptor. And I think part of it was I probably was getting some of this stuff in like 85 when it would have been on discount. So I was able to, my parents were able to afford some more of the Star Wars toys as they started to fade and they went on discount. But I remember the day I got my my TIE Interceptor, because it was an incredibly cold winter night in Minnesota. And we had a broken down little Ford Escort, and we were stopped at a stoplight. And my mom was like, "This little car is pretty tough. It gets us through." And it literally died as she was complimenting the car. And I just remember being like frozen solid, waiting to get in, you know, some strange pickup truck, tow truck to be driven home, and just like holding on to my TIE Interceptor and like, I must protect this.
Must protect this. Yes. So it sounds like you guys rode around in the Millennium Falcon growing up there.
I'm sure I tried to tell my mom to punch the dashboard and see if that would fix it.
It's got to work, Mom. Or get a droid to get down there. We are almost done here. It's a great story. I love Joseph, that just, we're just naturally, as we talk about this, we're going back to some of those memories of our youth as Star Wars fans, because again, that's where I think just a lot of these basic loves come from, of these vehicles and these toys. And that's why I love talking about it. We are going to get to our number ones, some honorable mentions, and more memories coming your way. But right now we're going to take a quick break here on Force.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique,
and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Welcome back here to Star Wars Ranked on the Force Center podcast feed. We're happy that all of you are joining us here today for what is turning into quite the walk down memory lane with our favorite Imperial vehicles, the best Imperial vehicles in Star Wars. Joseph Scrimshaw's here with me. And Joseph, before we get to our number ones, we're going to go through some honorable mentions. Now, there's I'd say limited number of choices when you really look at it. You know, there's variations and everything. So there's definitely a lot of choices. But I was going through the visual dictionaries, I was like, you know, we're going to have some things that people expect on this list, but it doesn't mean we don't have some things that almost made it. So what's your honorable mention list here?
Yeah, so one of the honorable mentions is the Corvus, the Inferno Squad ship that you get to see in Partaken in Battlefront 2 video game, and it's also in some of the various Fantasy Flight Star Wars games. I just love the design of the Corvus. I like that it keeps the whole dagger aesthetic of in triangle aesthetic of so many Imperial ships, but then it's got those kind of little like baby wings, the little curvy wings in the back, which I really like. And the reason I really like those curvy wings is going back to TIE Advanced X-1. And this goes back to what we were saying, right? This is the very first Star Wars film. They want to give Darth Vader a distinctive ship. They could have just did a different paint job, maybe. Maybe it was to make it as physically distinct as possible, but there's already that sense of design in play to give him the cool TIE Advanced X-1. So that's also on my runner-up list. Nice. Yeah. And then I wanted to put a Star Destroyer on the runner-up list.
Yeah.
So I picked a specific one. And the specific one I picked is the Inflictor, which is the one that goes down. I won't say. It appears somewhere in case I don't want to have spoilers. it appears in a novel that many people like. But according to Wikipedia, and I'm sure other sources that I double checked, it is also the one that we get to meet Rey on. So what a great Star Destroyer to celebrate. And then my final runner up is the AT Hauler from Solo, which is just such a different looking ship. It's so functional. It feels like there's these ships that the Empire builds to intimidate people, to be absolute, horrors of battle, and then to just be real functional. I love the little gantry walkway underneath it, which is both so practical and good for staring out at your future. So that is my list of runner-ups.
Great list, and I'll start where we are crossing some streams here, man. AT Hauler is on my honorable mention list, and there was a chance it could have made mine. I just didn't get over the hump. But yeah, there's just something about the design, the practicality, and the way it is needed, and it's so valuable to the story. And I love the train sequence in Solo, and then it's also so functional because it's got a shower. Like, hey, you could it big enough to fit a Wookiee and a smuggler. So I just like it. It's just one of those, again, fun part of a new Star Wars film is designs with the stuff we're already kind of familiar with. It works for me there. I included the TIE Striker and the Lambda class shuttles were on my list. Happy to discuss them with you. And then one of the final ones I'll talk about is you talked about it before too, but the TIE Bomber. Just a fun variation. I like flying them on the Battlefront games, even though they're slow and clunky. I love the Y-Wings, the rebel version of the bomber, so to speak. So I love that the Empire, again, in the second film, that someone's like, you know what we need for that sequence? We need some bombers. The Empire's got to have something different. And I was just fascinated and was watching Empire the other day on Disney Plus and just – That sequence when you see them and they're dropping the bombs down there into the caves and they're just boom, 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 the explosions. It just is one of those little favorite tiny little moments in Star Wars that I love. And it's courtesy of the TIE Bomber. So with the wonderful honorable mentions out of the way, we'll start closing down the list with our number ones. I'll go first so the guests can close the show. Probably no surprise if you've heard me talk about Star Wars for more than 5 minutes at any point. My number one Imperial vehicle, the best Imperial vehicle for my money, is the 74Z speeder bike. Take me to Endor. That's right. I love those biker scouts. Love the different classes of stormtroopers and all those things. I've had those discussions, but I have always been mesmerized by the speeder bike. As I'm talking to you all right now, I'm looking up at my 6-inch Black Series Biker Scout and speeder bike that's been with me for a while. I have the Power of the Force speeder bike ones, the ones that explode. Don't have an original Kenner one. That never made my collection, which might have helped fuel my obsession with the speeder bike. I love that sequence. I love the sounds. And I think part of the legacy, part of the fun of the speeder bike is when the sounds appear in other parts of Star Wars, even if there's different variations of the speeder bike. Watching Mandalorian, some speeders show up. In Rebels, the first episode of Rebels, I remember when I was talking about that with Mon Garrett on Jedi Alliance, we might have been teasing it a little bit, but just the fact that you see that there's some speeders in that first episode and it has the classic speeder sound, the speeder bike sound. And so you just kind of feel at home as a Star Wars fan, so like the TIE fighter sounds, everything. It's part of that too. And then again, I talked about the behind the scenes stuff, how that kind of just rolls on into the on-screen lore just as much sometimes when you're growing up, even now, whether it's Force Awakens behind the scenes stuff, prequel behind the scenes stuff. For me, seeing and learning, and I talked about it on that documentary from Star Wars to Jedi, the VHS tape. I rewatched that all last week, and they really go into how speeder bike sequence was shot, and I was fascinated with it as a kid, which is why I would jump on that palm tree that was kind of leaning sideways in my backyard as a kid and turn that into my very own speeder bike. Joseph, I couldn't do this list without giving the speeder bike its proper due.
That is right, and I never for one second considered putting the speeder bike on my list, not because I don't love it, but because I knew you had it handled.
Yes. Yeah, I did. We do try to do the surprise sometimes. We don't want to, you know, if you want to discuss this over the eye, just kind of, hey, and you're like, yeah, no, I assume pretty safely that you want to talk about the speeder bike.
Yeah, I love it. It's so great. I mean, it's not only the sequence is exciting. It's got some great moments. It's one of my favorite Luke moments of, you know, having the Force ability to chop at exactly the right moment in the front half that speeder bike goes flying into the ground. It's so great. But, you know, we talk a lot about the inspirations from Lucas being, you know, somebody who loves racing and speed. And, you know, it's so much of American Graffiti is built around that car culture. And the speeder bikes, to me, are such a huge part of that because they look like stripped down hot rods. Like so many Imperial vehicles are armored. Fully armored, and these look like they are absolutely built for speed. They are literally like have feels like kind of exposed parts, like certain kind of hot rod, and then just the way that they're designed, everything about them is just graphically about absolute forward movement, absolute speed, and it makes them exciting by themselves. But you know, we talked at the beginning about wanting to talk about ships to just talk about what's aesthetically cool, but sometimes there are deeper meanings. And to me, you look at the speeder bike, and that's a part of the heart of Star Wars because it is about action and speed and forward movement and racing off to the next adventure. And in some ways, the speeder bike is one of the best physical illustrations of that spirit of Star Wars.
You heard it here, folks. Speeder bikes are at the heart of Star Wars. I've never agreed with Joseph Scrimshaw more than I have right now. I would love it. And you know what? There's that playground set with like a swing and a slide and the little swings like a speeder bike. I never got to see one of those in person. I was probably too old by the time they even were released. But if I was to see one now, I'd risk breaking the slide swing set to ride one of those there. And if they could figure out a way to, I know like, is it Disney Shanghai that's got the Tron kind of thing where you're kind of on the Tron bikes for the ride. If they could find a way, Galaxy's Edge, I'm asking a lot because they're already done a great job with that land. But if you give me a speeder bike experience, I'm all for it. I'm all there. I'll pay top dollar for that, Bob.
Yeah. They're good for social distancing too, since only one person can ride on them at a time. It's perfect.
Perfect indeed. That is why my number one, the 74Z speeder bike, from the mean streets of Endor to many other places in Star Wars. So, Joseph, we're going to close down the list here. Put the cherry on top with your number one.
And my number one, my personal favorite, the Imperial Vehicle Cherry, is the AT-AT or AT-AT, depending on your age and preference. I'm going to say AT-AT because that's how I grew up with it. The AT-AT is it's just so bizarre and so cool. It's one of those things that when I saw it as a kid, I didn't question anything about it. Of like, well, why did they send walkers? Why aren't they having hovercraft? And you know, you can get to the adult stuff of like, well, their shields are up anyway, blah blah blah. Point is, I loved that they were this totally different idea of what Imperial might look like, and you totally felt it in the way that they were a little bit more anthropomorphized, that they were a little bit more like, well, they've got legs and a body. And when that head turns and blasts out at you, it feels like evil itself has got its eye on you and can take you down. So there's just like the absolute coolness of the feeling of them, the absolute inventiveness that the armor is, you know, too strong for blasters and having to use the tow cables, everything about the sequence. But it is becoming obvious from our talking about this, a lot of this is also the toys, and they were the holy grail for me. Yeah. They were the thing, along with the Death Star itself. I had by that point in life given up on the Death Star. I was literally told that my grandmother and Santa Claus combined could not afford the Death Star. and we still could not afford the AT-AT. And, you know, it was you talked to a lot of people of our generation. the rich kid on the block that everybody, maybe not rich, but the kid who was doing a little bit better or whatever, that was the kid who had the AT-AT. Was like, the what, you have it? And I finally got one, Power of the Force. My brother gave me one for Christmas, and I gave him the video game Rogue Squadron at the same Christmas, and I finally got one and displayed it proudly in a bunch of different homes that I lived in up until I moved to Los Angeles. So the AT-AT, it's great for lots of cool Star Wars reasons, a part of one of the coolest scenes, the most revolutionary special effects moments in cinema history, and also one of the most coveted toys of my life. So my number one has to be the AT-AT.
I love this. This is just like the speeder bike has to close my list. I'm glad this is closing the entire show. It is the embodiment of the Empire to me. We talk about how the sequence of introducing the Super Star Destroyer and the Imperial March is kind of the sounds of the Empire taking over the galaxy, or the sounds of their oppression. This is the visualization of it. Stomping oppressive foot racing down our plucky, down slowly racing toward our plucky rebels. I've talked often about how I love that shot through the binoculars there from what's Trey Callum, I believe his name, the rebel officer, who's played by Bob Anderson, the guy who does a lot of the sword stunts in the original trilogy for Vader, and how that terrified me as a kid and still brings those nerd chills. And I love, you're talking about, maybe not the rich kid on the block, but I had that friend too, Joseph, Terry. Terry got every toy. He got every toy. He was the kid that got Optimus Prime. He's the kid that got the USS flag from G.I. Joe, and he's the kid that had the AT-AT. And I never got the AT-AT. But it's the allure of it, even like you said, the Power of the Force one. Oh my gosh. The allure of it, the original Kenner one. There's a shop around the corner from me here, Magnolia Park in the Burbank area. It's a vintage kind of thrift shop, and they got a lot of Star Wars toys. And they had, I don't know if it's still there, they had the original Kenner out of the box, lights work and everything, and a Luke, a Hoth gear Luke, excuse me, a pilot Luke, they had it correct, X-Wing pilot Kenner Luke hanging down from a wire, and it sits up there, and it's priced to go at $300. And I walked in there one day, and I had that roll call of which credit card is open type of feeling. And Grace had to pull me back from the ledge. I don't know, man. It's that white whale from Star Wars collecting that it just doesn't go away.
And that's it is the white whale. Cool. Yeah. That kid was named Jeremy, who had in my life, who had Optimus Prime and the AT-AT. I did get Optimus Prime eventually. You're saying some great stuff about, and I think maybe some of the depth that I'm, a little toy focused on this one. That you're right, the literal march, that the gears and the foot stomps, it's so mechanical, it's a literal march. And you're reminding me by talking about Luke hanging from the bottom of it. It's a great depiction of these themes we talk about in Star Wars, where the AT-AT is this mechanical menace marching forward, 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 blasting everything at its sight. And the rebels have to be bizarrely creative in order to take them down. And that is another great example of the mechanical versus the organic in Star Wars.
I love it. I love it. I love the depth. I love the surface, just cool. And I love the toys. This is why this has been a fun conversation. Joseph, thank you so much for inspiring this list, bringing this list to the show, and sharing all of your memories. Great list, my friend. This is why we love talking Star Wars.
Yeah, this is a great one. I've got to nerd out so much. I've got nerd chills right here in my apartment.
Nerd chills indeed. More Star Wars ranks will be coming your way as we have fun just ranking all the parts of Star Wars. I have been discussing with our good friend Billy Patterson, Andres Cabrera. They love coming into rank two and trying to work some more with these, but it's always fun to sit down with Joseph. Well, to sit across town. We're doing this remotely, and there should be a documentary made about the making of this episode of Star Wars Ranked with the technical issues we dealt with. So we appreciate all of you out there for joining us and keeping with us on this ride through recording via social distancing measures. It's been a lot of fun. We also want to let you know, if you want to follow the conversation, use the hashtag Star Wars Ranked on Twitter and follow us at Force Center Pod. Like our Facebook page. We're on Instagram, YouTube. More things coming to YouTube, like our series Star Wars Show and Tell. We got some new in memoriams on the way that I'm really excited about. And yeah, Jennifer's we're talking with her to get her on Show and Tell as well. You know, she has a lot of things to share with all of you from her personal Star Wars collection. That's all on our YouTube channel, patreon.com/forcecenters, where you can go to support. TeePublic is where you can find our merch. And if you want to try an audiobook on us, go to audibletrial.com/forcecenter and pick a book, give it a whirl. Maybe even that mysterious book Joseph was mentioning. We got our own things going on. Joseph, they can follow you and your website. Anything you want to highlight for, that you're working on right now?
Not something I'm working on right now, but something that would maybe help people pass the time as they're looking for more entertainment. I got several comedy albums on my website. They're all available digitally. You can get a link there to bandcamp.com. You can find all that on my website, josephscrimshaw.com, and you can follow me on social media. Twitter and Instagram handle is @josephscrimshaw.
And you can follow me at, at Ken Napsok. And if you're looking for some more shows, I'm just launched a baseball podcast feed called Box Score Heroes. Episodes are forthcoming, but you can find it on Twitter and subscribe wherever you like your podcasts. That's coming to talk. My other passion is baseball. So what I do with Star Wars, I'm going to start doing a little more with baseball. Box Score Heroes coming your way. All right, that is it. Go play with your toys or go to that thrift shop. Go to that vintage store and get that toy you always wanted to complete your Star Wars collection. That is it. Star Wars has been wrapped.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stevens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.